is the math work group asked me to just kind of revisit their charge. So we have a big picture. We can return to the big picture, and you know, we can keep on returning to this throughout the course of the next day and a half if we feel it's necessary. Mitigation action plan calls for the math work group to develop guidance on how to integrate compensatory mitigation into a watershed context. And I'm just going to read this straight because I'm maybe a little bit out of context. Analyze the use of compensatory mitigation within a watershed context and identify criteria for making compensatory mitigation decisions in this context. Develop guidance, this is a quote from the action plan, I believe. Develop guidance to encourage placement of mitigation where it would have the greatest benefit and probability for long-term sustainability. The key phrase there, greatest benefit and probability for long-term sustainability. The hope is that the guidance will help decision makers utilize the watershed-based planning tools and resources already developed. So, learn from you. The three speakers we have now are Ralph Tyner, Ken Brazil, and Dan Smith. Ralph Tyner is a regional wetland coordinator for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service National Wetlands Inventory Northeast Region. He has over 30 years of experience in identification and evaluation. The past 8 years, he's been using remote sensing and map interpretation to produce preliminary assessments of wetlands and to characterize the status of natural habitats for selected watersheds in the Northeast United States. Ken Brazil has 15 years of experience with the Arkansas Soil and Water Conservation Commission. Over the past 10 years, he's been involved in developing wetland resource conservation and decision support system tools. His current wetland efforts include the development of a state monitoring strategy, information management system, wetland databases, and an internet wetland map viewer. And Dan Smith is a research ecologist with the Wetlands Waterways Experiment Station's Environmental Lab. Over the past 15 years, he has worked extensively in forested floodplains of the Southeast, the riparian ecosystems of the U.S., developing methods for assessing and restoring wetlands from the site-specific to watershed spatial scale. He's currently developing methods for assessing and restoring riparian ecosystems in a watershed context. I turn it over to Mr. Tyner.
Mitigation says basically mitigations are decisions are made on a case by case. And they don't consider things like the proper placement within landscape, ecological needs, cumulative effects and past impacts. I mean, that's what they say. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, some agencies actually work to these. And the charge, we've seen that list. No need to go through that right now. It's basically to look at mitigation from a watershed standpoint. I looked at the five steps that the mitigation work group developed, and what I'll be doing is addressing those that relate to the types of products that we produce, and I've highlighted them here. So there will be landscape assessment, historical assessment, assessment of the remaining wetlands, and restoration options. We really only get into identifying priorities. We identify more opportunities, and we don't deal with identification of specific projects and our standard products, as most of you are familiar with, are our wetland maps at a scale of 1 to 24,000 for most of the country, and geospatial data go along with that. Maps are available in some form for about 90% of the United States, and the digital data is about available for maybe 40% or so of the lower 48 states. We do realize that the maps have been produced since the 1970s. I mean, the earliest maps were derived from aerial photos from like mid to late 1970s. So in some cases, I mean, the maps are 30 years old or so. So I mean, that really limits their utility. So, but when we look at maps across the country and the digital data, most of the data is probably from the early 80s. You know, so I mean, that too will have limitations in terms of use, in terms of reflecting current conditions. We also have various status reports and trend reports. Now, the new products that I'm going to be speaking about are products that we've developed for state agencies because they've had a need for this type of information, either for developing watershed-based wetland conservation strategies or for identifying potential wetland restoration sites. Back in the mid-90s, I was on a detail with the state of Massachusetts where they were developing a watershed approach to proactive wetland restoration. And part of the first part of the job is really doing an assessment of wetlands. Where are the wetlands today? Which ones are impaired in some way? And at the same time, trying to identify wetland former wetlands that may be in a condition that they're suitable for restoration. And then the second part of that was then followed up with an assessment of where there were certain problems in a watershed in terms of flooding problems, erosion problems, water quality problems, even connectivity issues with fish and wildlife habitat. And that what they were trying to do was then target their proactive restoration to address some of those problems in the watershed. So from that experience, I took certain things back to the Fish and Wildlife Service, to the inventory, and developed a number of products that you see listed here. The watershed characterization report may encompass all of those things. I mean, it may deal with the current status of wetlands, so you have a complete inventory, relatively complete inventory of the wetlands of the United States. We would also then enhance that information to identify wetland functions, you know, where the wetlands are in the landscape and what their functions are. We can identify potential wetland restoration sites. We can also look beyond the bounds of the wetland and look at buffers around wetlands, buffers around streams, and also the general character of the land in terms of how much, quote, natural habitat is left in a particular watershed. And then we can look at the historical changes for various periods, and I'll go through some information that we generated for the Nanticoke as part of the presentation here. The Nanticoke watershed is in Maryland and Delaware, drains in the Chesapeake Bay. It's about 800 square miles in size. It represents a quarter of Delaware, and I don't know what percent of Maryland. The report is posted on the web, at least one facet of the report for the Maryland portion of the watershed. The other data will be posted shortly. There's a website listed. The Nanticoke assessment, from a landscape standpoint, we're looking at wetland types, we look at wetland functions, we look at the condition of the buffer, whether they're vegetated or they're developed or they're in agriculture. Same thing for the streams, the stream buffers. We would identify various potential wetland restoration sites, existing wetlands that are degraded in some way, and some other other sites that were formerly wetlands that may be suitable for restoration. And then the final part of that landscape assessment would address the overall land use within the watershed. The historical assessments, traditionally we've looked at wetland acres, how many acres of this type of wetland versus that. You've all seen the national reports on that. But when we add other attributes to the wetland data that we have, we can also begin to address functions and how they change over time, and as well as overall natural habitat. We can look at how that's changing. The procedures involve photo interpretation, map interpretation, and GIS analysis. The photo interpretation involves updating the National Wetland Inventory data with the most recent photography. And in some cases, if the state has done something more detailed in terms of the mapping, let's say they've done mapping in the early 1990s, and it's in digital form, we'll use that as the base. And then we'll build on that and make a better map product. I mean, we're not just tied to our 1970s data if there's a lot better data that's been derived elsewhere. Then the process of the photo interpretation will actually look at maps to see, well, how we can enhance the data in certain ways to identify the flow of water through the system, whether it's an outflow wetland, inflow wetland, relatively isolated wetland. And then we use various size, isolate is like taboo to say nowadays. You always have to put it in quotes or put an adjective in the front. Geographically isolated, okay, because everything's connected to everything else. It's a matter of how you look at it. The GIS analysis, where we have all this data in digital form, then we can generate maps and statistics. And I'll show you some examples, because this may be some of the information that the folks in the field can use to help view mitigation in a watershed context. Think about all those things that the MAP group was recommending, the historic analysis, the current analysis, and so on. The type of digital data that we have available is listed here. We have our own wetland inventory maps. We have our stream data that we get from the U.S. Geological Survey. We may have topographic maps, digital raster graphics from the USGS that we can look at to get an idea of slope. Sure, we could look at DEMs too, but we haven't got to that point yet. There's land use, land cover data in digital form available from a lot of state agencies. So that's pretty detailed. And then there's there's soil data that are available in digital form. And when we do a historic analysis in an area that's more impacted by agriculture, we'll just use the soil survey data as kind of a template to say, well, this is where wetlands were in the landscape based on the hydric soil map unit. When we're dealing with coastal areas or urban areas, it's a more difficult thing to do to reconstruct wetlands. And there we'd have to go back and look at historic maps or some kind of record to do whatever we could, or say, well, we can't do it because there's just no data available for that purpose. Some other sources of data that we might use is when we update our National Wetland Inventory maps, we now consult the soil survey, where you have digital data. We just simply lay it in the background, lay on top our NWI wetlands, and that way we can see what we might have missed. Whereas in the past, the only way to do that is from eye to eye, and that just took too much time, and it was beyond what our technique was, really. We're a photo interpretation technique. And then I mentioned state wetland data. We'll use that either as collateral in the background if we're pretty close in terms of the years and so on. But if it's a lot more detailed, we'll use the state data. So when we're assessing these existing aquatic resources, that's part of the charge of the soil, looking at water wetland mitigation in the watershed context. The updating of the NWI would be basically with the aerial photographs. We'd enhance it by adding features like landscape position, landform, and water flow path, and also different water body types to give us a much better connection to wetland functions. So then we can generate, again, the maps that show the different types, acreages, and so on. The enhanced NWI, this is where I mentioned the four things that we would be adding to the digital wetland database. Landscape position is the relationship between a wetland and a water body. So now we'd identify all the wetlands that are in a lake basin, all the wetlands that are associated with rivers, which really don't come out clearly through the cordon system, because if you're familiar with that, we've got our riverine wetlands in the basically in the channel, and then all the floodplain wetlands are all clusters. So there's no way of really clearly separating them, at least from a classification standpoint, from an upland forested wetland, you know, ones that's surrounded completely by uplands. So we try to get that at that through landscape position. The landform is where we're trying to identify basin wetlands from flats and inner flues from floodplains and some other things. Water flow path is where we have isolated wetlands. We have outflow wetlands, inflow wetlands, throughflow wetlands, bidirectional flow wetlands, very similar to, you know, standard HGM language. And then water body types, we might identify vernal pools or something like that, or maybe the Grady ponds, you know, where those types are readily identifiable. And again, this gives us more information in the database that we can then link to wetland functions. So for example, you might see something like this on a standard NWI map for the Nanticoke, 142,000 acres of wetland, and estuarine wetlands, you get a count there, clustering wetlands count, riverine wetlands count. Then you can figure out how many acres of different types of wetland you have based on their life form, emergent, shrub, and forested, unconsolidated shore, and so on, and by water regime. So that's the standard kind of information you'll get from NWI. This enhanced NWI, basically you get a sense of, well, how many wetlands are out there? Because now, rather than individual cover types for a single wetland, okay, they'll all have some common code in terms of their landscape position. So we can give you an idea of how many wetlands there are out there. Then we could identify, well, 12% of the wetlands are associated with rivers and streams. Just 0.2% are associated with lakes in this particular area. And isolated wetlands or headwater wetlands are 72% of the wetlands. And then there's landform, how many, 11% are floodplain wetlands, 17% are fringe, and then these interfluve types, these broad interfluve flat wetlands represent 71%. And then if we wanted to look at from a water flow standpoint, we get an idea, well, about 4% have been identified as isolated, 68% are outflow wetlands, and then so on. So we can generate maps that show you these features. We can then take this information and relate it to functions. Okay, we have a correlation report that we've developed to correlate these properties with wetland functions with about 10 different functions. We've worked with various agencies throughout the Northeast. The states are listed there, Maine, New York, Delaware, and Maryland, to develop this. It's not anything we just did ourselves sitting behind a desk in Hadley, Massachusetts. We also reviewed the literature in the process to give us some support on that. And so now we have a matrix, basically, of wetland functions, wetland characteristics here, and we can identify which ones are high or moderate and so on. Predicted functions here, and I'm already down to 5 minutes, so I'm going quick with the gun here. Okay. Products. Okay, so we can identify how many wetlands or what percentage of the acreage perform different functions. We can do that for all the functions, and then you just see some raw numbers there. I mean, those are broken actually down by acres and by high or moderate. I just totaled them right here. Then for historical assessment, we're looking at that hydric soil information for this particular area. We'll recompile the wetlands and say, well, this is what we think there was back in pre-settlement. And then you can end up with some statistics like this, 230,000 acres and various combinations of wetland properties. Then if you wanted to look at the functions, you can generate, take the same correlations that we use for the present day, apply it to the past and see what we had there. And if you want to look at how things changed in time, you could look, generate some numbers like this by a weighted index. And you can note stream flow maintenance, -64%. So a lot of those headwater wetlands have been converted to agriculture in this particular area. Oop, I went too fast on that. Okay, now we're getting quickly into wetland restoration. The former wetlands versus existing wetlands that are degraded. Most of the existing sites can be identified through the standard NWI codes on there. The tightly restricted ones, we'll have to add a code to that. For identifying former wetlands, we'll have to look at the soils data and identify the current land use to determine whether or not they're in a condition that can be restored. And we ran the numbers for the Nanticoke, and this is what we came up with. This number is conservative because we really didn't do a full-blown assessment of the drained wetlands. We only looked at those that we felt were in a kind of a condition. They're the moisture of the group, or maybe still the pressional landscape features, as opposed to real well-drained farmland. Then maps will generate and identify the location there of those wetland restoration sites by type. Now what I've got is a combination of the map objectives there on the right and NWI data on the left. So the landscape context, looking at acres and functions and so on, you can get that from our wetland data. We'll enhance it, you know, to identify riparian corridors and buffers. Those things can be done. And if you want to look at how things are, the status overall in the watershed, you can look at natural habitat. Cumulative effects of past impacts. So now we're looking at wetland types, changes. Same thing for riparian corridors and buffers, and then we relate the functional differences like we did in that one example. Opportunities for mitigation, that would be those potential wetland restoration sites. We can identify potential stream corridor restoration areas too, you know, by their current land use. Various agencies are using the information. Maine's using it for developing a watershed-based strategy for the Casco Bay watershed. Maryland's using it for their so-called green infrastructure assessment tool, where they're trying to conserve natural habitat in the face of development pressures throughout the state. The information's also being used to help with modeling for the HGM, because they're using this to identify various wetland types, and then they can identify reference wetlands and so on. New York City DEP is using it for watershed management of their watershed water supply reservoirs. Ballpark cost, just to give you an idea of what it costs, may range $100 to $150, where land use cover data and soil data are available. And that includes the updated enhanced NWI and then analysis of these stream corridors and so on. And where NWI has been updated, and we've updated a good number of areas in the past couple of years, then to do the additional work is somewhere around $50 to $75 based on work that we've done in the Northeast. The bottom line is that these tools could help make planning or considering mitigation in the watershed context a bit easier. And so I guess that's why I'm here. But what it doesn't do, we don't set priorities. You know, the agency still must determine where to mitigate, when to mitigate, how much to restore, and so on. So if you're interested in the report, there's examples posted on the web at that website. And if you have any questions, you can contact me. So thank you.